just going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome to Filthy Shambles, Season 3, Episode 21. I'm Spooky, your favourite part-time podcaster, and I'm joined by Ross for this Friday
Hello.
Podcast. Hi, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I mean, part-time podcaster.
You're doing yourself a disservice.
Well, the thing is, it's usually two podcasts per week, right? And a lot more content, and I've it's not that I've slacked in the last couple of weeks. I've been unwell. I've lost my voice completely. Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the usual kind of seasonal change. You know, my body just gives up, basically. Like, twice a year, I'm sick. It's just the way it is. It's my age. Do you know what I'm saying? Got to start injecting those stem cells at some point. So the last 2 weeks have been extraordinarily boring as well, mainly because of the international break. So it compounds the whole thing. And I know other people churn out the podcasts, and obviously the Fighting Cock always does, and they always produce quality, regardless of whether there's any news. But luckily for us, we've got a few things we can pluck out from the last couple of weeks. And as my voice is back, I think I can reintroduce the spooky monologues. So no doubt I'll be ranting at something at some point during this podcast. I apologise to our listeners, but how you been, mate? It's been, I don't know when the last time was that we chatted. It might have actually been a couple of weeks ago, if I remember correctly. Was it
could have been,
Chelsea?
I don't know. I think so. I enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I found it hilarious that everyone was kind of throwing himself off a bridge because we lost, but we just kept going. And even when we were getting hammered, apparently, even though we didn't actually get hammered, if that makes any sense, because they
we
really
kind of lost 4.
Their...
We lost 4-1, but we it doesn't feel like we lost 4-1. And then, but when you think about it, I hate the fact that we lost 4-1. You know, it's never.
Oh yeah, I.
It's never easy, right? Losing to them lot, and we've lost to them lot a lot over the years. Like it's a rarity, often beating Chelsea, especially at their shithole, and it's doubly worse at ours because they lulled it up as any rival club would do, no doubt. But that game, it was like an implosion from the gods. It was like, nah, you've had it too good, Tottenham. You've had a bit of luck, but the luck you've actually curated and crafted for yourself. You know, luck is this, you know, on a philosophical level. To be lucky, you have to be good to put yourselves in those positions to take advantage of you know, it's not like we were awful for 10 games, although there's a lot of revisionist historians at the minute saying, well, we didn't actually play that well in those 10 games, and now you're seeing the real Tottenham.
I would love to meet these people who didn't think we played that well in the 10 games. I'd love to, just a chat. I mean, you know, I'd probably put a hammer in their head, but you know,
steady. I mean, do you know how to use a hammer?
I don't know if. I'll go get my qualifications first. I'll go to get my levels. A few badges. But so, yeah,
Go on. No. I'm interrupting you, mate, because I've lost my flow. I'm bad enough when I'm in my flow and I interrupt people. So I'm going to just sit back.
Yeah, I think this is what the international break does to people. It just throws them off your rhythm, and the games, I had them on in the background, and they were just so, like pulling teeth. I mean, I remember being at my son's age, and you used to get excited for all the games, but even his generation aren't that bothered. I mean, he didn't even know England were playing.
I think qualifying games, I've never really been excited about them. I think the last qualifying game I was excited about that I watched in a pub in the Rose and Crown in Walthamstow was when England Do you know what? I think we. I don't even think we won the game, but we went to Italy. I think we drew and we qualified.
Back in 97? Yeah.
A long time ago. So, like, there has to be a risk, right? And England are very good in qualifying groups. There's no risk of us not qualifying for a competition. It's what we do when we get there. And that's when I kind of turn on my obsession with England winning something, because it's you know, you want to talk about Tottenham. It's a lot worse being an England supporter.
The vacuum that it causes of absolute depression when we get knocked out, especially how we get knocked out. And I mean, it's normally, you know, penalties. It's been a Beckham sending off, Rooney being sent off, and all these things. But it is horrible. And I remember in the last World Cup when we got knocked out by France and Kane missed that penalty. It just,
That was horrible. Yeah.
But I mean, after that, I was very lucky because I mean, I love Messi. I've followed him throughout his career, and to watch him lift it made up for it, if I'm honest, because I love the guy. I think he's exceptional. And he's a once-in-a-lifetime player. I remember my brother, who's a bit older than me, speaking about Maradona and Hoddle, but I wasn't old enough to appreciate them players.
I remember the hand of God. I remember watching that game.
How did you feel?
I think
I'm a little bit ancient.
I think it was extraordinary. Like, I mean, I didn't, obviously, I'm a young lad. I didn't kind of lose my shit in any way. It was like, wow, how's he done that? How's he managed to kind of punch the ball in? But then what Maradona did next was, I was so gobsmacked, but I was still devastated at the end of the game that somehow England didn't win the game. It was like, I can't believe we've lost this. And, you know, I go back to the World Cup before 82.
I was born, by the way. just make you feel really old.
Oh my God. So in 1982, I remember watching Brazil, Italy, and being absolutely devastated that Brazil lost, because I kind of remember that Brazilian team. They had such incredible names, you know, like Falco, Socrates, and you know, it was just it was fantastical, especially as a kid and you're watching it. And then obviously, you know, Italy did what they did. So yeah, my early memories weren't fueled by kind of cynical outputs that we've had to endure since, you know, when you actually land on a team, when you truly start supporting a football club, when you start going to games and you're kind of pulled into the experience, right? And the collective experience that the nation has, it does change, because then you kind of want to know how it feels to say we're World Cup winners, you know, or even Euro champions, and we've not had that, not in my lifetime.
I think the closest we've got, and I don't want to do any disrespect to them, is the women winning it a couple of years ago. And that was great. I mean, that felt like, wow, European champions. But obviously, just due to history, you're going to feel a bit more if it was the men. But it was still great watching them. So you've got that to hold on to if you are interested in women's football. But which I am, I'm a big supporter of it. But the men just, I mean, every time I listen to them get interviewed, and I don't know if you've experienced this, especially with like the Beckham documentary and things like that coming out, they always say, oh, if that happened, we would have won it. And you're thinking, really? That French team in 98, I think would have destroyed us. But okay, you hang your hat on that. But I've heard it so many times, you know, that bloody golden generation as well, which they never even had a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think the fundamental problem with England is that we're English. Now hear me out. Let me try this.
No, I believe. And I agree with you. It's just funny hearing it out loud.
This is a this won't be a monologue because I don't have the energy to go this deep into international football, because we're trying to get away from this bloody break and back to Tottenham, which we will do in a moment. But if you look at other countries, I think there's an element of them being fearless, right? And yes, they have a more consistent pedigree in terms of winning, in terms of winning championships and World Cups and the rest of it. But they're fearless. There's this kind of cultural thing that where the media, the people, whoever it is, the pressure that's put on by the country, by the nation, onto the team, and ends with us being a little bit tentative in how we approach things as well. Like, oh, you can't play him because he's too young, or you can't build a team around Glenn Hoddle because he doesn't tackle people with studs up. And it's like our mentality hasn't, considering we invented the sport and the rest of it, we've not been progressive in any way. And I think we just need to be fearless. We need to say, these are the best players that we have right now. Play them. Play offensively. Follow Postecoglou's philosophy.
I was literally going to say, you might as well just get Ange in.
Mate, can I ask you a favour? Just, I'm not going to edit this out. Just with your mic, just be wary of how vocal you are, because you're
right.
Spiking it into the reds. Yeah, there's a little bit of a production sneaking into the podcast. I'm not going to edit this out because I'm lazy.
Ooh.
So when you hit the red, then the listeners will probably have ears bleeding, if that makes sense. So, yeah, sorry to cut you off there.
No. I forgot what I was going to say now.
Yeah, classic anyway, spooky. I'm back. I'm officially.
He's back.
Officially back. Look, let's cut the England talk though, because it has been boring. An international break has been awful. Sam Cornish posted something about our game against Aston Villa on Sunday. Is our first weekend game for 2 months? I think.
Huh?
I think that was a tweet. Yeah. Have I misquoted him? Give me a second. Because obviously, with the internet being right in front of me, I can just go back. Sunday's our first weekend home game in 2 months. So that is bonkers. Yeah, we've been on TV so much.
This is what I was going to say. We haven't played that many games at home here, have we? So is this good?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've got... I know we've played Chelsea, Man U, Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And there's probably one other, but I just don't remember us playing at home that much.
Yeah, we've played a fair amount of games away from home in that first kind of, I was going to say the first part of the first 10 games. There were so many international breaks in those first 10 games. I've completely disassociated where we are, you know, in the season, because it's so stop start. Mm. But it'd be good to get back to Tottenham. There's a fair bit. Like we get to the news, the football news later, but just in terms of this game, obviously Postecoglou, Ange had his presser earlier today. We've seen half of it. I think the rest gets released after 10 o'clock this evening. It looks like Sarr is injured. Destiny's back. Obviously, we're missing Mickey and Maddison until the new year. I got a feeling Mickey might be back a little bit earlier. Maybe I'm reading too much into Instagram posts. But we'll see. Romero is obviously missing Villa and then missing Man City, which is absolutely devastating. But there you go. And we might see a bit of Lo Celso, who seems to, again, perform, I wouldn't say at an elite level, but at a very high level for Argentina, assisting and doing the normal, I'll say the normal performance that he provides at international level. Is probably the right way, the clumsy way of saying it. He just doesn't do that for Spurs. So we can have a chat about team selection. But just going into this game, because we've had so much time kind of sitting back and not watching Spurs, and maybe not even thinking that much about Spurs, have you changed your views or your opinions? Have you changed your expectations for the remainder of the season? Or have you always kind of... always been in the same place with it. Like with me, I kind of know this season's going to be a little bit tricky, a little bit tough, but I'm looking forward to every game, which is something I can't say for the last 4 years.
Yes, as ironically, especially the home games. My expectations have always been that this season is going to be up and down. I mean, none of us would have expected the start that we got at the beginning of the season. I mean, to go the opening 10 games unbeaten and see us go so far ahead at one point, it was great. And but
overnight, and
but I always think those that thought we were onto something and going to go win the league, I think they got sucked into something that
I don't think anyone really believed that. Though I've seen a couple of people that said,
"Oh, I was gearing up for a title challenge." And I'm thinking, well, if you've built yourself up for that, you're gonna head for a fall, because it was never our intention to. If we happen to become on a title charge, then so be it. But I just think I'm just at that stage now of my supporting life, whatever you want to call it, where I just want to enjoy the football. Of course, I want to win trophies. Of course, I want to see us go deep into tournaments. I'll never forget the Champions League run. But I want to do it while enjoying it. It's just, I mean, you look at teams. Go on.
No. There's something that you said there, and there's nothing. I'm not saying that. Right. First of all, opinions on football, right, are going to change weekly, and for the most part, if you're grounded and you're logical and you're still emotionally, you know, connected to everything that's happening, but if you're grounded about things, you kind of know the bigger picture is that hasn't changed. And our start to the season, we could have lost 3 games in the opening 10 games, or maybe 4 games, right? And people would have been, oh, God, this is going to be really, really tough. It's going to be really difficult. But because of Postecoglou's impact, we would have backed him. And there's no difference to it now, at the point that we're at this moment, even with the last 2 results not going our way. It would be the same result, that we would be backing a manager who gets it, who understands the bigger picture. We understand that we need to get to certain points in that journey to be able to progress to the next step. Now, the way we started, because it's amplified tenfold, because it's so much better than what we've had. You know, you get the hype from the media that I'm not that fussed about, but within the stadium, you do believe. And there were questions posed to Postecoglou, who said, the supporters can do what they want. It's their football club. If they want to believe we could do something here, that's a powerful thing. You only have to look at Liverpool, who are like a religious cult. You know, they believe they deserve to win everything, but they win everything. Do you get what I'm saying? There's something to be said about a fan-based mentality. And the thing is, it's been really difficult for us to have a fan-based mentality that's collectively, well, singing from the same page, because the club has been so fragmented over the years that no one can really agree what's good and what we should be doing. But now, very, 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 very early in this journey, we kind of know what we're about, what we want to be about. So you can get carried away. And I know others have, with playfully discussed, could we, you know, and that was a funny meme for the moment, and now we're getting up, you know, down and dirty we're in the mud, basically, in terms of we have to pick ourselves up. And it isn't like I've seen the word crisis being used, and I'm like, okay, let's stick, you know, injury wise it's a bit brutal. But it's not like we haven't got Postecoglou. It's not like we haven't got a system. It's not like we haven't got a new philosophy. It's not like we don't have good players. We are just very light in key areas. And all that this has done is illustrate that we do need another summer window. And also, it's illustrated the fact that there are still big question marks about how we go about signing players. Like, why didn't we buy an extra centre-back? Why were we trying to bid for that Bournemouth player on deadline day? Why were we not more prepared? Like, what is the reason? Now, we don't know. We're not privy to what Spurs might be doing behind closed doors. We might have a target that we want, and we don't want to buy someone beforehand, even though we now do need a bit of depth there. So it's a tricky one, and a debate, a discussion is good, but I think finality being used every weekend, or like, I told you so, we're in trouble, we're finished, season's over, what was your expectation? I mean, what was yours at the start of the season? And what is it now? You know, just to carry the question across to a conclusion.
At the start of the season, I just wanted to... I know it sounds a bit...
You said it already, boring. But go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it sounds a bit boring, but because it's a bit on the fence. But I just wanted to enjoy it. I mean, I think we went through with Conte, Mourinho, and a little bit of Nuno. It kind of detached us away from the club itself, and it just felt like it was just a procession, almost kind of a, well, we got to go watch football. Oh, great. Oh, Tottenham are on TV. Okay, I better watch it because I'm a Tottenham fan. And now it just feels like, oh, good, Tottenham are on TV again. I also thought that if we get top eight, that's good. I don't want to finish 7th and 8th, because that's not real progress. But if we did finish that low, I'd want to see us be playing great football. Or entertaining football, I should probably phrase it that way. Now, top 6, or even top 5, because I know if the coefficient for the Champions League changes this season. So if you know someone gets a bit further, then we get the 5th place into the Champions League. So I don't see why we can't aim for that. It really depends on how people come back from their injuries, what we do in January, which I want to come on to a bit later. But it's just been so nice, and it's just such a shame that we had so many... I mean, that Chelsea game has ripped us apart, but not in a kind of...
It's ridiculous. It's not ridiculous. You can't plan for something like... I mean, you can.
No, you can't. But you can't legislate for something like that.
Yeah. Tottenham are not in a position to have like Romero, Mickey van der Ven out on the pitch and have two other players on the bench of similar quality. We're not... I don't think any club has... I mean, Man City, arguably... You know, to say that you need a backup for every single player, we do have backups. The problem is they're not as good as the first 11. Tottenham's first 11 was playing at about 60% of their capacity, right? I'll die on this hill. We've just started out with Postecoglou. His teams tend to lose the very early games, and Spurs didn't, which kind of went against... his normal narrative when he takes over a new club. And obviously we've had the last two games which have highlighted a lot of things, but I think they're exaggerated as well because they're circumstantial. Like to lose the players that we lost in the Chelsea game and then have to kind of try to play the same way but with different players playing for the first time and in a competitive game, it doesn't quite gel. You kind of think, well, fair enough. I mean, this is probably how I thought our season would start. And yes, to go back to what I said earlier, we could have done more in the summer. And then you could say, well, if we had done more, we could still be involved in Champions League. And I'm like, we're still involved now, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit different. If we lose our next three games, then obviously we really need to remain grounded to the point where we might have to sit down a little bit and just say... buckle up, because you know we need to get to January to fix things.
I think if we do lose the next three games, or if they're not as positive as what's gone previously, I don't think it's... I mean, look, if the
say
if
it, just say it, because I've got an opinion.
If an Ange out brigade come out, then that's it. I'm just going to leave Twitter.
It's just one of those things,
and it just highlights the fact that we do need a few more players in, but it was never going to be fixed in one window, and it's not going to be fixed in two windows. It could take three windows to get it almost to a point where Ange has got a more relevant squad to them what he has, because at the minute he's relying on players like Dier and Davies and Emerson Royale and Højbjerg, who aren't Ange players, if we're being honest. So, but I thought Davies and Dyer did fine against Wolves.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I missed the second half, but Dan was updating me. And obviously on the podcast, we had a chat about it. And, these are not players that are going to be, in terms of longevity under Postecoglou, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. We need centre-back, we need a midfielder, we need a striker, we need to work out Richarlison, we need to work out one or two other players as well. and that will happen over time. Now, to just kind of playfully make it a conversation around people turning on, they won't turn on Postecoglou, by the way. They turn on Levy and Enoch. That's the easier target. That's how it's going to play out. But if people do that, or if people do start questioning Postecoglou, he's naive, the high line, and all this. The reality is, again, like, what were you actually expecting game to game? Like, because I do think we our first 11 have enough about them this season to finish in the top four. And still not be anywhere near the very best football they can play, because we are building towards something, right? And we're learning lessons as we are, you know, playing game to game. And then if you replayed all these games again next season, we'd probably go unbeaten again in the opening 10, but be more convincing. And that's just evolution, right? There is a plan to what we are doing. And I think, yes, we should remain ambitious, but we need to be pragmatic about it. The last four seasons, there's been a lot of, it's going to come good, without any evidence, without any belief, you know, lying to myself week after week. Whereas now, I'm not worried. And I think that's, for me, such an important thing to take into games, knowing that we are heading in the right direction. And the club will be tested in January, which is a difficult time to sign players. And then obviously in the summer, where the real work has to be done to allow us to step up, especially if we're in Europe next season, because our squad isn't big enough for two competitions.
I wanted to ask you a question about January. I know it's flipping.
Go for it.
I'm turning around the hierarchy here. What is considered a good window for you? How many players do you think, and be realistic, obviously we're not, because when it comes to getting the defender in, he's going to be one that's going to be sitting on the bench, unless it's, you know, a world-class kind of, I can't think of any world-class defenders off my head now. Araujo probably at Barcelona or something. They're going to be on the bench if Van de Ven and Romero are fit and not suspended.
So just with
that in mind, how many players do you think will get in, and how much do you think we'll spend?
That's a good question. I'd like to hear your answer for this, but I think with me, it's going to be quite boring. And I think what Spurs need to do is this first part of the season leading up to Christmas. We don't know what's going to happen between now and Christmas, but thus far, regardless of the implosion against Chelsea, losing the amount of players that we did in one instance, it kind of just tells you that we need a bit more quality to stabilise the squad and to help uphold that system that Postecoglou is playing, you know, because that's what's important. The system, the players fit into the system. The better the players, the better the system, then the better the football. So I think we need to be intelligent in January. I think that there's probably going to be loan signings because we cannot and will not sign the players that we want to sign unless we have targeted players using data and the rest of it that we can bring in January, because those players are perhaps in leagues that are not considered elite, you know, and easier to get now rather than the summer, or perhaps they're players who are not playing. We tend to buy players that are going to be future squad players, you know, the likes of Ashley Phillips, the other defender who might come in the summer. I've forgotten his name. The young guy that looks 25 and he's like 18 years old.
Oh, the Croatian lad.
Yeah, the defender. Like absolute unit.
Jokanović or something like that, isn't it?
I love this. I love us having academy players that we can promote, and I love us signing top European talent and whatever else. But what we need is just squad players who are good enough and can hit the ground running in the Premier League that can just help us bulk up. Now, these players, it doesn't mean that, I mean, let's say the loan players will probably go back home, right? But the players that we might find and sign for cheap transfer fees could still be at Tottenham, you know, for the next couple of seasons or further. There could be squad players. For example, you could let Eric Dier leave, for example. Okay, I love Dier, by the way. Obviously, he's not the right player for us anymore, and definitely not for an Ange Postecoglou team. But let Eric Dier go, for example, or Højbjerg go, and then you sign their replacements. But their replacements will be better because they will fit the physicality and the technical aspects that Postecoglou needs. So I don't know if I've answered your question. I probably cheated, but my point is we do need a centre back in there. We midfield is still fairly stacked. I've got to be honest, because you've got Skip, you've got Bentancur coming back, but it would be good to have something as an option. As an alternative to Maddison, and then maybe work out what we do with strikers. But I think some of those story arcs are going to get pushed into the summer because it's going to cost more money. So loan players and a centre back and a midfielder, I think will be good and much needed to protect us going into the latter parts of the season. Champions League would be massive for us to get that. Again, it's probably ahead of schedule. Do you know what I'm saying? And that can sometimes change the way the club and the supporters see things. But we need European football, at Tottenham, and we need the best European football we can get. So,
I'm not really on board with. What about me? Okay, I agree with the defender. We do need. I don't know whether we need a left-sided centre-back or a right-sided centre-back or if it matters.
Two-footed, mate.
To be fair, you got 2 feet. Use them. I'd like to see us get an attacking player in the mould of a kind of... It's really hard to find Maddison-type players because there's not many about. Because you've got so many kind of hybrid players. You look at Bernardo Silva and Kevin De Bruyne and Pedri at Barcelona. They're not... number 10s, they're not really number 8s, they're like 8.5s, and it's really hard to find them type of players. But I would like to see us loan in that sort of player, like a João Félix, but he's at Barca for the rest of the season. But just that type of attacking player.
Clever signings, cheap loans, but they add something, they add a dimension.
Exactly, and there'll be players out there at the minute that aren't getting the games they want. So, people have spoken about Jack Grealish, but I just can't see him leaving Man City. I know he hasn't. I know people are saying Guardiola's turned him into this robot, and probably that's what he does with every player.
Just a
bit of a funky loan, and get that centre back in because it's desperate that we need him. If we lose Højbjerg to, I don't know who he was linked to heavily. Was it Munich?
Do you know what? I think he'll leave in the summer. I've just got a feeling. He's not everyone's favourite player, but he's come on. He's done a job every single time, and I think he's very disciplined for what he's been asked to do by Postecoglou, and he does give 100%, and not in the comical way where. Perhaps before, in previous sides, in previous seasons, he's tried to do things that he's obviously doesn't have the capacity to do, and that's kind of left us very short in midfield because it kind of highlights our weaknesses and his weaknesses and so on. So he's come on in these closed games, and you kind of need someone dependable, and his experience is worth us holding on to him. But you just don't know in football, right?
It depends. I mean, would we go for a Calvin Phillips? I don't know. I don't know if he's an Ange-type player. The other looking at it, in the centre-back one, you are having to kind of look at the Lloyd Kellys of this world. Because, as I said, there are defenders
out. The Bournemouth player?
Yeah, he's playing at left-back at the minute. I think he played there in the last game.
I think he's going AC Milan, right?
What? Lloyd Kettler, is he? God. Then we could go for... Maybe, but run with it. Put it on Twitter, see how far it gets spread. We've also could look at Toysin Adrabayo at the the English defender at Fulham who wanted to all of a sudden go to France, which is weird. He'd be a decent signing. Lots of Premier League experience, still quite young. But just something, just another body in there with a bit of experience. 100%.
Lloyd Kelly, by the way. Lloyd Kelly, this is from 2 days ago. So Milan do want to sign him. Someone said to me it was done and dusted, but obviously not. I don't think Bournemouth want to sell him. So that does mean he's still available. So we'll see. He might be the player that they've targeted, or maybe it was a bit of desperation on deadline day from us, and we'll have had a lot of time to look at the data and the rest of it, and maybe sign someone else. So this type of player would do a job for us, and not just for the rest of this season, but going into next season. But we've signed so many players that just haven't fitted the club, the system, everything. With us just being a little bit more calculated with how we go about our business. That doesn't mean spending a season trying to work it out, but you know, I trust that Spurs understand that and know that they need to back Postecoglou. And thus far, I haven't seen anything that would suggest that there isn't a good relationship there. So, I'm good.
I watched the press conference a little bit earlier on, and he said that, look, all the January planning, Johan Lang, or Lange, I think he pronounced it, he's been doing bits behind the scene. But, I mean, as Ange said, he doesn't really get fully involved until just a couple of days before January. And by the looks, I mean, he talks to every signing we've had in. He's talked to the player beforehand just to get a little bit of a
I love that
heads up on what they're like, which is great. Which is what I know Ferguson used to go see the players' parents to see what kind of people they would turn into, which is always a good step. Could you imagine just having Arteta turn up your house? You just ask him to leave, and it's
fucking weirdo.
I know.
He's such a weirdo.
The light bulb. Yeah, don't get me started on that. He said today, I'm going to continue speaking freely about refs. It's like, good. Keep going, fella.
Okay.
Whatever. But I just can't see us making any panic signings under Ange. Even Johnson, when we got him, he didn't feel like it was all panic stations. It was like,
yeah.
I just want to see him have a run of games like that.
That's exactly it.
He doesn't have to get brought off.
He's been so unlucky. And home game on Sunday is probably the perfect opportunity for him. And obviously for Spurs, for us as well, for us to see us play at home on a weekend, even though it is a Sunday.
Yeah.
And obviously try and get something back from what we lost against Chelsea. Oh, excuse me, just burping here, just having a nice rum and coke. I kind of missed alcohol in the last 2 weeks. Not that I'm a heavy drinker at all, but I kind of missed my Friday session. Excuse the occasional burping and ice sound effects.
It adds a very kind of cultural feel to the
episode, doesn't, mate. I'm just fumbling words here because I'm so out of
sync. Just the clinking of the glasses. It just sounds very
jazz.
That's
it, clinking. That's the word. who would think I was a blogger? with Villa, I mean, I don't want us to start predicting or whatever else, but like how, just a couple of things really. How do you see it going? And do you think we're going to suffer from having to play, and I don't want to use the word makeshift again because I think that's disrespectful to Postecoglou's system. But are you kind of struggling with this game confidence-wise? And do you think, as a little side question, do you think Lo Celso will finally play a part and finally do something in the Tottenham shirt?
I'm going to answer your second
time. Take
question
your time.
First.
Go.
I'm going to answer your second. Lo Celso... I think it's an attitude thing with him. I don't think it's a ability. I don't think it's... Because he's so highly thought of in Argentina and within the Argentina national team.
Does he not fancy Tottenham and England? Is that it?
I don't know. Because you get the likes of Romero, who I know had a few years in Italy, but they seem to kind of almost embrace the club. I'm trying to think of any other Argentinians, and there's people going to be saying, yeah, you've forgotten about so-and-so, that have come into the club. But you look at the likes of Vicario and players like that, but I do wonder with a lot of these South Americans, they take so long to learn the language. I mean, you look at Aguero.
Oh, you've gone fully Graham Souness.
I've gone proper football man. Yeah, so you're not learning the language. Off. But they do take long. I mean, you look at Richarlison. I just wonder if it might help. Obviously, they're speaking English in training sessions, but maybe it just helps them if they communicate a bit more freer. But, you know, who am I to say?
He's always seen
Spanish.
He's always seemed disconnected, Lo Celso. And I know when you look back to that window and we got Ndombele and there was this...
Great memories.
I mean, they were signed for Pochettino. Pochettino gets sacked. We have, like, Mourinho come in. We have the pandemic. It's a complete clusterfuck, right?
That was the Amazon season, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Every perspective, every angle that you want to look back on that, you know, just none of it ever looks good. But he just hasn't, for me, he's never showing the...
Excuse me.
The kind of, it's not so much the commitment, but it's that that air of authority, that kind of, you know, when you see a player like Basuma on Pomp and Bentancur, you believe in them. Do you know what I'm saying?
He had a good spell under Mourinho, didn't he? Lo Celso. There was a period under Jose where he looked decent. I'm not saying he was some sort of world beater and he was going to turn into the next Messi, but he just looked good, and it was like, right, here we go. Him and Ndombele, this is what we signed him for. And then Ndombele obviously did what he did, or didn't do.
Not a lot.
And he's doing...
It's all right, let's not talk about him, because that would be like a podcast.
Ripping up trees in Turkey. But Lo Celso he's a bit of an enigma, isn't he? You kind of don't know. He looks happy enough in training sessions. You know, when they have like, oh, this team won today, and the hilarity that comes with. And he's always smiling and all that. He doesn't look like he's the worst person in the world. But you just think,
you know,
he doesn't look too happy, though.
Yeah.
His eyes look dead.
Yeah, maybe that's just who he is, right? Okay. The mad thing is, though, Ross, when you think about it, you've got Maddison, who's... Obviously, his personality and the output that he gives verbally and on the pitch, right, is undisputed. You fall in love with the guy, but he's also not just Lewis Hopi. He's a player that's producing the goods. he's a brilliant footballer, and he's everything that we want at Tottenham. And he's very much a very classical Tottenham player. And I'm not saying I expect Lo Celso to start doing bants and the rest of it, start talking fluid English and connecting with the fan base. But you think, and it's not a like for like, pound for pound comparison, but in terms of what they can offer, they're both they're both creative players, right? Mm. They both link the midfield to the attack, etc., etc. So us banging on about, we need someone to come in to. I don't know why when I do a Tottenham impression, it's always someone with a sore throat, but that's rather apt for the last 2 weeks. But like, what's going on, mate? Like, Lo Celso, you know, is literally the player that we're talking about wanting. Like, oh, we're going to buy Eze.
Yeah.
Oh, he's signed a new contract with Palace. Let's hope he's got
that means nothing.
Clause. But do you get what I'm saying? It doesn't feel like the club believe in Lo Celso enough for us to then believe in him. But a lot of it has come down to the fact that the guy's never available for selection. So we never get the opportunity to see him go out there and play 3, 4, 5 games. But he has that opportunity now. So for me, he's someone who might be gone in January if we don't see anything between now and then. So...
Well, Barcelona have been sniffing around for him because Gavi's out for like a year.
ACL.
God, that injury, it looked horrible. I'm a big fan of Barcelona. I've been for like 30 years, and it hurts seeing that little lad. He's an absolute diamond, and I'm gutted we're not going to see him in the Euros. But Lo Celso could easily go there and turn into, you know, what we all thought he should
be. It'd be easy for him. That's our disrespect to La Liga, but he will love it there. Maybe it is a cultural thing. Maybe it is... He would love living in Spain and playing football in Spain compared to
could do
England and the Premier League. We can just talk from afar, right? And the only evidence we ever have is what we see with our eyes, you know, out on the pitch. Look, mate, we're going to finish up here for the podcast in terms of the podcast that goes out on all podcast apps. So if you're listening on Spotify or Google or Apple, thanks for downloading. Thanks for the support. If you go to Spooky in Purgatory, which is on patreon.com, you can listen to the rest of this podcast. It's just how it works. First 45 minutes free. The day after, the rest of the podcast behind the paywall, because I need money to buy rum. So thanks again. And don't need money to buy ice cubes, mate. What are you? Do you go to Waitrose to buy your ice cubes? You're proper Tory.
I have a guy.
Right. So for more of this wit and banter, check out Patreon.